I'll call this planning commission meeting to order. Will you read the roll, please, Lisa?
Sure. Chairman Ryan?
Here.
Commissioner Kilbride?
Here.
Commissioner Fishman? Commissioner Kirk?
Here.
Here.
Commissioner Gottlieb?
Here.
Commissioner Fagan?
Here.
Commissioner Hoy, please, Lisa.
I don't think so, but I'll just double check, just to make the Attorney General happy, nope.
And so, John, are you gonna lead us in the
Sure.
discussion of the comprehensive plan?
Well, when you said that, I thought you were gonna ask me, like, lead you in a prayer, like, John, could you lead us in, I'm like, oh, I don't have one prepared. All right, this is gonna be a pretty informal meeting, but first of all, thanks for having me out this evening. I'm excited to kick off this project. I know some of you in the room extremely well. Others I know a little bit, others I haven't had the chance to work with. So I'll give you a little bit of background about me and then our firm and sort of the project. So John Housiel, I've been a village resident for, I think, 19 years. And I started doing villages planning and zoning work about a year before I moved here. So I think I may be the longest running staff or one of the longer running staff members here via consultancy, not the actual staff member. But over the last almost 20 years have done, worked on the previous comprehensive plan a long time ago. It was a pretty quick hit effort. The village really didn't have much of one on board. So they said, we can scrape together a few dollars and can you pull one together? So a firm I worked with previously did the comprehensive plan. I worked on the River Forest Corridors Master Plan, which is what the plaque is there. It won the Illinois Top Strategic Plan Award for that year for Best Plan. And I've done all the development review in the last 20 years. So Dominican, Concordia, Town Center 2, all the condominiums, anything and everything. I've done all the design review for and development review for the village. So this project that we're kicking off is the comprehensive plan. I'll tell you a little bit about, and if at any point, this isn't going to be a lecture, so at any point, jump in, raise your hand. I'm one of nine kids, so you just got to sort of work your way into the conversation flow, or you may get talked over. But a comprehensive plan, the best way, it's a long-range plan, a long-term plan. It's designed to be governed over like a 10 to 20-year period. It typically addresses components such as land use and development, transportation, community facilities, parks and open space, arts and culture, history, things like that. So it covers a really wide spectrum of components. The best way to think about it is it's a foundation for decision making. Zoning is regulatory. It dictates what you can and can't do with your property. This is not zoning. This should help inform the DRB, the village board, the zoning board, the plan commission. If a development comes before you, you can say, is this development consistent with what we're trying to achieve in our comprehensive plan? If they're looking to prioritize capital improvement expenditures, saying, is this capital improvement expenditure in priority sequence with what we want to do as part of our comprehensive plan going forward? So it informs decision-making for developers, property owners, staff, elected and appointed officials. It doesn't dictate what you have to do, but it should help you make better decisions over the course of the next decade. So this is just the kickoff because the Plan Commission is charged with shepherding the comprehensive plan through the process. And at the end of the process, when it's done, the Plan Commission will hopefully recommend the document to the Village Board. The Plan Commission will conduct a public hearing so people can comment on it. And then the recommended comprehensive plan will go to the Village Board for their consideration and ultimately their approval and adoption. So the whole process will likely take about 10 months or so. And we'll have a lot of public outreach and a lot of public input. So one of the main thing I want to do tonight is answer any questions you have about a comprehensive plan. A little bit about my firm. I started House Levine Associates in 2004 with Devin Levine. In 2014, we were recognized as the most influential planning firm in the United States, and that was with, we had like 12 people. And we won the National APA Excellence Award for our work. Probably half the work we do is comprehensive planning, and we work all over the United States, not just Chicago region or Illinois, but really all over. And I think having the advantage or having the privilege of working in River Forest, I understand local issues and concerns and priorities, but I'm able to say, hey, boy, in Bentonville, Arkansas, they're considering this approach. It's kind of cool. We might want to talk about what they're doing. Or in Bridgeport, Connecticut, to sort of mitigate some stormwater issues, they're trying these techniques. It's kind of cool. We might want to talk about what they're doing. So because we work all over the country, we can bring some of those best practices to this group to talk about things we might want to consider as we develop the comprehensive plan in River Forest. So a couple of key people are going to be helping me on my end throughout the process. One is Jamie Jackson. She's a senior associate with our firm. She's on vacation and couldn't be here this evening. She's actually going to be the project manager. I'll be the project principal, overseeing everything and being at most of these meetings. But Jamie is going to be the project manager, running a lot of the day-to-day logistics of the project with the village staff. And then the other key player, one of the other key players from our office is Paul Finn, who is here this evening with us. So the core team from our office is going to be Jamie, myself, and Paul. But we've got about 16 other people that are experts at economic development, graphic design, GIS, analysis, you name it. So we'll have the whole team working behind us, but we'll be the faces you see the most at these meetings. We're also joined by KLOA, CLOA. They're a transportation and engineering firm, because we're going to be taking a close look at transportation, specifically bicycle and pedestrian transportation, or active transportation, they call it. And so we're going to be developing as part of this a bicycle master plan for the village. But it also will likely be transportation or engineering issues that might pop up. So KLOA is on board to help out with those issues. We're also joined with Ehlers. Ehlers is a development advisory firm. Right now they're working with the village and the Economic Development Commission and village staff on some development concepts and solicitation for Lakin Park. So because they're already doing development economic work in the village, we thought they'd be a perfect team to make sure that our recommendations are solid from an economic perspective when it comes to development or land use recommendations, primarily on the corridors, where we're going to see most of the dynamic land use changes. And then we're also joined with Gary Kanin of Seven Generations Ahead. And one of the main reasons, I've worked with Gary before, I'm on the board of directors for the Oak Park River Forest Community Foundation. And I'm the chairman of the Community Works Advisory Board for the foundation. So one of the initiatives is Planet Green, which is the environmental sustainability plan, which both Oak Park and River Forest adopted as sort of a document to help inform their decisions. So because of the newly formed Sustainability Commission, we thought it might be a good idea to have Gary on board to work with that commission as we go through the document to make sure we are appropriately incorporating sustainability appropriately for this community throughout that. So Gary's on board to help with that dialogue as well. So that's a little bit about the team. That's generally what a comprehensive plan is. And what I largely want to do tonight is answer any questions you might have, but talk about and go through with you the scope of work. And then after I go through the scope of work, I'm going to take you through a brief questionnaire. So I'm going to sort of put you to work a little bit, because one of the things that we do when we go through this is we will conduct workshops with residents, we will conduct workshops with business owners, we will conduct interviews, we will have online surveys for students, we will have online surveys for residents and business owners. And one of the things we like to do is compare the answers among different user groups. So if we ask everybody what's the five biggest issues facing the village, it's curious to see what the Plan Commission members say versus the board versus business owners versus residents. Because it's interesting to see, lots of times there's a lot of consensus, a lot of time there's not. But it's interesting to sort of see where those perspectives are. So after we go through the scope of work and explain and walk you through the whole thing, I want to take you through a brief workshop exercise to begin to ask you some questions. So before we go through the scope, are there any questions for me about what a comprehensive plan is, what it isn't, what we're sort of getting in for? Because this will be the group that shepherds it through the process. And throughout the process, as we develop it, we'll keep bringing it back to this group as a sounding board to tweak it, revise it, add to it, take away from it, to make sure it's right at every stage before we bring it out to the public for general public commentary. You get a crack at it first at every step along the way. So you're going to guide and help the process. So before I go any further, yes.
So the first plan, was that the one that in November 2003?
2003 is the one that this is replacing, right?
Right, right.
And that was when you were with one of the firms that worked on that?
I believe it was Turkle, Pettigrew, Allen & Payne. Yeah, right. So I was a planner at Turkle, Pettigrew, Allen & Payne. Before that, we did a Lake Street Corridor plan, and then it was a pretty detailed plan for Lake Street Corridor with that firm. And then the village said, you know, we really need to do a corridor, or excuse me, a comprehensive plan, but they really didn't have much money. And I'm like, scrape something together and we'll get something on the books for you guys. So we did that plan, but it wasn't as vested in as much as this would is in terms of the village wanting to get a really good, worthwhile comprehensive plan. Yeah.
So is this one, are you working from this or are you just?
No, I it's a good question. We'll get into that, but it's a good question. We don't want to dismiss past efforts, because in that document, in the corridor plan that was done, in other planning studies that have been done since then, there's a lot of good work that's been done, and a lot of things merit consideration and may merit being brought forward and integrating into this plan. But market conditions have changed, village perceptions may have changed, opportunities may have changed, priorities may have changed. So we'll look at those and we'll talk about what needs to be brought forward, but we're not going to be starting from there and revising it. No. We are starting wholesale from scratch. Wholesale from scratch, yeah.
We're looking at this and saying this is still applicable. And when you do
Oh, for sure,
yeah. Yeah.
This is what we're seeing from still 2003.
Right. And I can tell you right now, one of the reasons I started my own firm is because after working for that firm and working for a large corporation, URS Corporation, about 57,000 employees worldwide, and I was the director of urban planning out of the Chicago office, I was just convinced there was a better way of doing stuff. So what we do now is nothing at all like that. So don't even hold it up as a benchmark. I have one of these in my bag. I didn't even think I had it, but I'll give it to you and you can pass it around. But it'll give you a sense of some of the type of work that we do. It's a firm brochure I had in there. I didn't even realize I had it in there, but it'll show you some of the type of work that we do. But we've, to sort of a blow our horn a little bit, we've won Best Comprehensive Plan Award in about six states over the last 10 years, in addition to our National Planning Award at the national level. So, I think the last one we won was last year in Minnesota. It won the state's Most Innovative Plan Award for the entire state of Minnesota. And as a result of that, I was asked to speak at the Economic Development Association of the state as the plenary speaker, because the comprehensive plan had been leveraged so successfully as an economic development tool for the city of St. Cloud, Minnesota. So that'll give you a sense. So look at what's in there compared to the village's existing comp plan, and it's like apples and oranges.
I just looked at your website, it says you're doing more high-tech integration.
Yeah, right. It's and we'll get into that here. And we can talk a little bit about that. One of the things we're sort of excited to do is to work with the village, and Eric and I have talked a little bit about this. We haven't sort of had that brainstorming meeting yet. But we really want to use, to your advantage and to be honest, to the firm's advantage, we would like to use River Forest as a showcase for the latest technology that's out there in terms of visualization, 3D, geoplanning, GIS, you name it. And really sort of use this as a case study for how planning, integrating full technology ought to be done. Right now we're leading the country in that. In fact, all last week I was in San Diego at the ESRI conference, which is a user conference for ESRI Corporation, who does GIS, GeoPlanner, City Engine 3D analysis, all of that. We're the only planning firm in the country that is an ESRI business partner, and we help develop and sort of beta test a lot of the software that they come out with for GIS analysis and try to apply it to the planning realm. So we think we can do some amazing stuff here and want to sort of use this as an opportunity to do that. So, but if you look in there, you won't see anything at all that even resembles the old plan. And that's the point. That's the point. So,
John, you mentioned the connection with planning creating. What will the connection or influence or review or be with CMAP 2040 or the CMAP 2050?
Yeah, the CMAP on to 2050 is being developed now. It's not done yet. GoTo 2040 is done. They're in the process of updating. It's a regional master plan. And a lot of what's in CMAP's plans, there's nothing that's often, and we'll look at those documents as well, but a lot of those, that's a regional plan. So there's typically, another name to call it would be sort of just like sound planning principles. So nothing we do here will buck that, but we'll want to make sure the priorities of this document are what's best for the village. But in doing that, because of where we are, our compact design and development, our access to transit, our grid system with sidewalks, and I mean, everything we do here is going to be lockstep with the overarching goals of GoTo 2040. So I can't think of anything we would come up with that would be bump up against what would consistency with GoTo 2040 or onto 2050. So we'll be looking at both of those, even though onto 2050 is just being drafted, it's still in the middle stages. But we'll look at those like with all documents. Yeah. And Planet Green, We don't want to, and when we do this, and I say we'll look at what other communities are doing if it's appropriate for examination, but we may take an in totally indifferent application to sustainability than Oak Park did or Chicago did or whatever. We've got to do what works right for River Forest, you know. So I know Planet Green intimately, as does Gary. We know there's a sustainability commission now, so the village is committed to that. So we want to make sure that we incorporate those things appropriately for this community and not necessarily just do what another community may have done because it worked for their community. But it is sort of the sustainability framework for both communities in terms of application. So we will not have, I don't think, a sustainability chapter. It used to be for comprehensive plans, the trend was to have a sustainability chapter. But now sustainability is so ingrained in the way things are done, it's just throughout the document, and it's not called out as a specific chapter. When you talk about land use, you incorporate it. When you talk about transportation, you incorporate it. So it's just about incorporating the notions of it appropriately throughout the entire document, as opposed to saying, here's a chapter on this topic. So that's how we'll likely do it. And we'll use Gary and the commission to make sure we're sort of at least considering best practices and how they apply here. So we didn't want to overlook that, that sort of that recent commitment. Any other questions about anything?
Do we see a plan from a comparable community?
Sure, I can send a couple PDFs off to Eric tomorrow. Yeah, shoot them off to you guys. You bet.
Actually, although not comparable in size, Oak Park just finished theirs, what, about a year or so ago? John must have seen on that, so we could send you that as well. Obviously, Black community, we can assess it as well.
And I guess, go ahead and look at that. I would almost say don't. Look at that one. And the reason being is you'll get a sense from the document that's going around. And I could have brought some for all of you. I didn't even think to have it in my bag. But Oak Park, as you can probably imagine, took a turn that we didn't really expect. But we had to do it because a process has to respond to the community and the residents. And they had a chapter on governmental excellence. Most comprehensive plans, in fact, no comprehensive plans have chapters on that. They did. Most comprehensive plans do not have a chapter on education because there's school districts and the village or the municipality isn't in charge of education. They had a chapter on education. So we did things there a little bit differently than we would in most, and it was much more text-laden document, policy document, than the type of document we typically like to produce for a comprehensive plan. A lot more graphics, a lot more technology, a lot more visualization, graphic communication. Try to keep text, not just running pages of text, but to be the plan they wanted, it was this massive outreach, sort of a text-laden document. So it was perfect for them. It's exactly what they needed. I don't think it's what River Forest wants and or needs. So I can shoot you a link to that one as well as a couple other ones to take a look at. So, all right. So what I want to do, everybody should have a copy of the scope of work. Yes?
No, I don't have it.
No?
Can make copies.
That'd be great. I brought one here. It's stapled, but if you can make copies.
Yeah, I got it.
So when they get back from that, we can we'll go through the scope of work because I want you to know. Okay, thanks. I just want you to know what it is that you're getting yourselves in for the next year. So, but it's a pretty detailed. So they're printing that out. So before I get into the detailed scope of work, a comprehensive plan or any planning process has to do three things, simply put. And those of you who have worked on plans in the past, if you've heard this, I apologize, but it's the best way to explain it. A comprehensive plan or a planning process has to do three things. The first thing is you have to establish where you are right now as a community. And there's the good, the bad, and the ugly with that. But you have to have an honest conversation of where you are. The next thing in any planning process is once you establish where you are, the next thing you have to determine is where you want to go. What do you want to achieve? What do you want to be? What do you want to accomplish on Lake Street, Harlem, Madison, in the neighborhoods, whatever? Once you know where you are now, once you know where you want to go, the third part of any process is figuring out what you have to do to get there. And that's it. That's sort of a nutshell. Planning is really those sort of three pieces. So because we're consultants, we've broken it down into nine simple steps. But planning is really those three things. So I want to go through the scope of work. I'll start now, even though you don't all have a copy, and then you can sort of jump in. Step one is a project initiation. That's just getting the project started. And there's a few different things that we do. One is a kickoff meeting with staff. And while Eric and I have talked on the phone, we haven't gotten my team and their team together to talk about all the sort of kickoff things. it's mostly a logistics meeting. Make sure coordination is there, emails are there, technology exchange is there, data is provided what needs to be provided. But it's a logistical meeting with staff. Next thing, and we haven't conducted this yet, is a village board workshop. I think it's important. Yes, shoot.
So is there a timeline for all of this?
Yeah, it's in the proposal. It's not attached to this, but I believe it's a 10 to 12 month timeline for the whole process, right?
Yeah. I think once we get the kickoff meetings set and checked off, then we would update the timeline.
Right. So the whole, and again, the key to the timeline is you want to maintain a project momentum once you get started. You don't want people to say, hey, I was at that workshop town hall meeting 4 months ago, whatever happened with that, that's the kiss of death. But you also want enough time for that ebb and flow of ideas and conversation. So usually 10 to 12 months is about the time frame. So again, the first step is initiating the project, and there are several things that are done. So kickoff meeting with staff, logistics, a workshop.
Scheduling that in the works, I'm just curious.
Oh yeah, yeah, and that's often not a singular event, but sort of an ongoing dialogue back and forth. We've already given Eric the data requests of stuff that we need for GIS and other data. We've talked about logistics. So that's often more of an ongoing thing than a singular event, yeah. Another thing we want to schedule pretty soon here, and again, we're working up against a summer schedule of meetings, but a village board workshop. I think even though the Plan Commission is shepherding us through the process, the village board, they're the policy makers. They're the ones who establish policy for the village and direction for the village, and they're ultimately going to be the ones adopting your recommended plan. So I think it's important at the very beginning to let them know what we're about to undertake and get their opinion on different things. So that's just a workshop at the beginning to sort of pick their brains a little bit. That has not yet been scheduled yet. We want to do it at a regularly scheduled board meeting. So we have to find a meeting and an agenda where we can squeak in and get about 30 minutes of their time. 1C is a Plan Commission Initiation Workshop. That's this evening to sort of get you oriented and give you a heads up as to sort of what's coming down the road and answer any questions. And then the next thing is a Joint Boards and Commissions Workshop. And this is something that I want to schedule that may have the Historic Preservation Commission, Sustainability Commission, Zoning Board of Appeals, Traffic and Safety. It's any other board and commission, because these are typically residents that hear issues that most residents, if you sit on the Traffic and Safety Commission, you're hearing issues about traffic and safety and pedestrian crossings and intersections. Most residents don't know about that. We need to hear what that board and commission thinks. Zoning Board of Appeals, they're hearing people say, I can't build the house I want to build because it's too close to the property line. I think the FAR is too restrictive, whatever. Most residents don't hear that. The ZBA has that insight. So we want to have a joint workshop where all the boards and commissions are together so I can run them through a workshop. And I think it's important for the Sustainability Commission to hear the ZBA issues and the ZBA to hear the Historic Preservation Commission issues and the HPC to hear the Traffic and Safety Commission issues. All boards and commissions do their job better if they know the other issues that are going on. So we'll schedule a joint workshop in the evening for all of those groups to get together and have sort of a town hall style meeting. So those are the first events: Plan Commission meeting, Village Board meeting, Joint Boards and Commissions meeting, and staff meetings. So those are the first ones to get the project launched. Step two is outreach, community engagement. This starts at the beginning of the project and runs all the way through to the very end of the project. This plan has to be reflective of the concerns, priorities, aspirations of the residents and business owners of this community. It can't be our plan, can't be staff's plan, it can't be the Plan Commission's plan, and it shouldn't be the village board's plan. It needs to be a plan that is reflective of the entire community. And so we've got a pretty robust outreach program to make sure we hear all the voices we need to be hearing. And so I'll run through these real quickly. A community town hall workshop, typically held at 7 o'clock in the evening. Whenever we engage the public, the engagements are designed to be 90 minutes or less. Because after, as exciting as planning and zoning is to some people, after 90 minutes, somebody's gonna fade. A community workshop is typically held at 7 o'clock to 8:30 in the evening on a weekday, likely be held here or another room if we needed more room. And anybody and everybody in the community is open to welcome. What I think we should probably do is time it with an email blast and or a village newsletter or something like that, so we get a lot of traction. And maybe an article in the Forest Leaves or Wednesday Journal, sort of saying, hey, we're kicking off the project, it's gonna be awesome. Next workshop is scheduled for this date, check out the website. So we'll wanna get that lined up. 2B is a business workshop. Business owners have totally different sets of issues and priorities than do residents, often. You go talk to Frank Bertoli about what it's like to run a pizza business and a deli and a convenience store in town. He may have issues that somebody who's lived here 20 years never knew existed as far as issue. Somebody trying to develop property on Madison Street is going to have issues residents don't have. So we have to reach out and talk to business owners. These workshops are typically held in the morning, usually at 8 o'clock in the morning, because business owners like to come in. You ply them with bagels and coffee, they'll give you an hour time and they're off to work. They don't like to come after work in the evening. So the business workshop is geared for the AM hours. Any business owner or operator is welcome to come to that. Residents can too, but it's focused on business discussions. We then do interviews and focus group discussions. And this is where we're gonna rely on, this is sort of homework assignment number one, all right? So I'll give you a few homework assignments. We're gonna work with you and staff, and we want you to identify a preliminary list of people you think we should sit down with and talk with one-on-one. Is there a resident or a not-for-profit group or a neighborhood advocacy group or a River Forest Cycling Club group or someone who's lived here 140 years? George, man, you got to pick his brain. Or someone who moved here 2 months ago from Austin who's just got amazing ideas. Can you help us identify the individuals or groups we should be sitting down with one-on-one? We don't know who those people are, so we rely on you to help us identify those people.
And just to dovetail on that, John, I would suggest if you could come up with two or three individuals,
right,
of stakeholders, of people you think would be good, and then not only let us know, but reach out to them in a position of advocacy. The hardest thing we have is to get resident feedback and input when there isn't a problem,
right,
or there's something going on, right? Something going on, we'll hear about
right.
it. But when we did we're working on a website redesign, we went to the board and said, give us two or three people. They gave us some people. People are busy. People got tough schedules. Okay. And we understand. So we had asked not only for the names, but then for you to reach out to those people and say, hey, some of them Bill is going to call you.
Right.
Work with them to try to give them just a little bit of your time.
And some of the, give you an idea of some of the groups. We may be like, do we want to sit down? And even though we're not going to be planning for the Park District because of their own district, we want to make sure we coordinate to the extent we can. So maybe one of the focus groups would be the Park District Director and two board members. And maybe that those three people talking to us for an hour might be one of them. Someone from the school district. Maybe we get someone from Willard, someone from Lincoln, someone from Roosevelt, get them in a room, and we talk with those three people about school district issues, concerns about kids walking to school, whatever. Maybe we want to talk with Dave King because he's the broker that does most of commercial broker. You know, who are the groups or individuals we might want to chat with? And the reason we do that is because we might have a town hall type forum. We could have maybe 150 people in the room. And some things may or may not get said at that meeting. But some people might not say what they really want to say because there's 149 other people in the room. You get that person one-on-one in a room with just me and Paul and Jamie, they'll tell us anything they want to say. We need that candid feedback. So job number one for you, or homework assignment number one, is think of a couple of people or groups that you think we might want to consider. We'll do about 20 or so. And this is a good point to say this. The communication protocol for this project would be anything from our office is going to go directly, I'm assuming, to you, Eric, and we'll probably CC Lisa as well. And then everything from the village's side, either the plan commission, the board members, other staff, would come from Eric to me or Jamie. So, I mean, Lisa, you're more than welcome to call me up anytime about an issue. I'm easy to get a hold of. I'm glad to talk to you. But it may be a dialogue that other people on the plan commission would benefit from. And if you and I just talk, they miss out. But if your question goes to Eric, Eric comes to me, I give it to him, he can disseminate it back out to everybody. So communication protocol, anything you come up with goes to Eric, he'll get it to me, I'll send it to him, he'll send it back out. So homework assignment one, who we should be talking to. Meetings with adjacent communities. We're gonna wanna be talking with Maywood, Elmwood Park, Forest Park, Oak Park, and Chicago. Some of the economic engines that the village have are their perimeter corridors. We share one half of those with an adjacent community. It's a good idea to hear what their plans are, what they're thinking, what their issues are, because along these corridors, in addition to working with IDOT on a couple of them, problems are best going to be solved in working cooperatively with adjacent communities. So we have to find out what they're thinking and what their issues are. So we'll be holding meetings with all the adjacent communities to River Forest. Communities that
can I ask a question?
Sure, just jump in whenever, yeah.
So when you hold these meetings, does someone take minutes and then you disseminate or not really?
No. What we'll do is, it's a good question. We won't take official minutes at these meetings. If we interview 20 people, we'll say, we interviewed 20 people, here's a list of the people we interviewed. And it'll be their name and sort of what their affiliation with, school district, local commercial broker, whatever. And we'll say, here's a summary of the things we heard. here's what people think is best, here's what they think the biggest issues are. Collectively, this group thinks these are the biggest priorities. Now, they may be all over the place.
Feedback on all these. We don't just wait till the
final. No. That's an excellent question. Every time we do an outreach event, we summarize the results of that outreach. And it comes back to you guys. And it will go on the village, and it will go on the project website. We'll be getting that. We're going to be doing a project website for this. So if you were on vacation and couldn't go to the town hall meeting, you can come back the next week, click on town hall meeting results, and see a summary of all the conversation.
Right. I was just thinking I'd be curious to see what the adjacent community says.
Very much so. So what we'll do is we will have those meetings and conduct them, and then we'll write summaries of what we heard, right? And the idea is not to assign a comment to a person, because we don't want to get anybody in trouble. But we want people to know what we're hearing. So that'll all be transparent, all be summarized independently, posted as PDFs on the website, so you can click on and read anyone you want. Yeah, it's a good question. So community activities and events, nothing specifically mentioned yet, but I mean, holiday parades. I said, hey, maybe we go to Flamingo Fridays, and we say, hey, you know, grab a Stiegel out of the cooler, have some Fritos, and fill out this postcard. It has two questions on it. Drop it in the box, grab another Stiegel. I mean, we could go to set up a booth after the parade, or there's different things that we might be able to do. The Blue Sky Festival in the park, or we didn't identify any one particular thing, and there may be events that we don't want to muddy with planning stuff, but there may be ones that say, hey, this would be a great opportunity, let's develop some postcards. Some of the best feedback we get is just put a stack of postcards at an event and say, hey, here's what we're asking on the back, you know, what's the single biggest issue facing the village in the next 10 years. Drop it down, drop it in a box.
I think the block party is a good idea, because that's how sustainability started with Katie.
I agree.
She came to the block parties, and they started just had a little booth.
I agree.
And that was very, you know, people are relaxed.
Right. So there's a number of different things that we want. And again, we didn't want to get specific, because that's something we sort of had to brainstorm with staff about, to say what would be appropriate, what wouldn't, how could we roll this out. But we think there may be some opportunities to capitalize on some festivals or events that would already be scheduled or take place anyway. Don't want to hijack them. Don't want to take them over. Don't want to make a social event, a boring government event. But there may be ways of doing it in a way to capture people when they gather. So just something to think about. And again, this, I guess, is another homework assignment. If you think there's an idea, event, the block party is a good idea, a type of thing you think we might want to take advantage of, maybe just let us know and see if we can't figure out a way to do it. So I think that's a good one. And then another one is called a do-it-yourself workshop kit. And this is, we develop, it'll be an envelope like this, and it'll say do-it-yourself workshop kit. River Forest Comprehensive Plan, it'll be numbered. It may be a neighborhood group. It may be student groups. Students tend to do this a lot. Sometimes teachers will say, hey, Jimmy, you know, next week for your social studies extra credit assignment, I want you to get a do-it-yourself workshop kit and take 30 minutes and run the class through a comprehensive plan workshop. It has instructions on how to run the workshop. You can run it up to 20 or 25 people. It takes 45 minutes to an hour. We tell you how to facilitate it, what the questions are. We put little golf pencils in here. So literally, it's a 100% self-contained kit. And all we ask is that if you want one, one can be given to you, mailed to you. You can come to the village hall and pick one up. It's just that they be numbered. And then we say, okay, this one was picked up by Sarah Johnson. And the group she's going to do is her neighborhood Bible study group. And she picked it up on this date. So it goes out. She fills it all out, puts everything back in here, seals it, and comes back to us. We summarize it just as if it was a workshop we did. And some communities, these get no traction at all because they like coming to organized events. In other communities, they'll do hundreds of these because they would rather do the neighborhood level ad hoc than come to an organized event. But we'll make them available for anybody who wants them. So it's kind of a cool thing.
The process for our providing feedback, you know, both as residents and members of the Planning Commission, is through the Planning Commission.
I think that's best. Yeah, you're more than welcome to come to any event. But participate. You can come to a workshop, the vision workshop, charrette, whatever, and participate. But you'll have a chance to actually craft content when we get into that part of the process before it even goes out there. So most plan commission members will go to community events and participate. But your real charge is to sort of be the sounding board for the community here. But you can come to anything and participate in any way, shape, or form. And just because you took a survey online doesn't mean you can't fill it out here. Doesn't mean you can't fill it out at your block party. We're not doing a statistically valid survey instrument. We just want to get feedback, so you can duplicate stuff.
You can only talk once.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we don't care about stuff like that. So, So do-it-yourself workshop kits will be available, and sometimes they're really helpful. We can even get into, I know a lot of people, as to probably everybody here in the school districts and the board and else, that we may be able to identify two teachers at every grade level or one teacher at every other grade level and have them run their students through a half-hour workshop to find out. You know, I always say, when was the last time you asked 200 fifth graders what's most important to them about where they live? I'm guessing never, and the answers are pretty amazing. But they're the ones you want to come back here. The high school kids after college, they're the ones you want to come back here. And we've seen communities change their policy on sidewalks, tree planting, urban forestry, all because of what was driven primarily from what elementary school kids have said that didn't register as their priorities before the students weighed in. So again, DIY kits can be not just wait for people to come get them, but you can actively go out and say, hey, would you do one of these with your group? And it's a pretty effective tool. So, and it's fun for the kids and teachers. An interactive project website. We will be developing an interactive project website. It will be linked to the village's homepage, I think, ideally. So anybody goes. And the reason we do that is we tend not to want to produce unique URLs for a project. If you remember back the CAP the Ike study in Oak Park, a long time, but you know, they're looking at capping the Eisenhower from Austin to Harlem. I don't know if you guys remember that at all. I can tell you. I was the project director for that for URS Corporation. And there were basically three different scenarios that played out and that were zeroed in on. But there was one gentleman who didn't want anything to do with it. And there was captheike.com or .org was the website created for that at the village's request. And somebody came up with captheike!.com or something like that. It was almost the exact same thing. And really just littered the community with that. So people would go to that and the skin looked exactly like the project website and it was just horrible content. And so what we tended to, and there were other, and there's other things that have been done with unique URLs. But what we tend to do is say, listen, you want to go to the project website, go to the village's homepage and there's a link right there, just click the button. And then we're not worried about web addresses or anything. So we'll design an interactive project website. And on the website, there'll be a whole host of things. We'll integrate it with the village's social networking if you want to, your existing accounts for Facebook, Twitter, whatever else. We can tie into those directly. We're going to have a thing called Map Social. It's an online mapping platform where people can actually map their concerns, their comments, to a GIS mapping system of the village. So they can say, this is a dangerous intersection. This site ought to be redeveloped. There's graffiti on this wall. You can drop anything you want, type in any comment you want, and we can sort of crowdsource outreach maps for the entire village. That'll be on the website as well.
So is that like a shred where they give you a stack of post-its and you put them in?
It's even better. Electronic. It's electronic. And the way it's funny that you say that, it's something that we developed probably about 8 years ago, and we used it as a competitive advantage for our firm. And we'd go into to compete against another firm and say, hey, and if you hire us, we invented this really cool thing that you can do. This is about 8 or 9 years ago. So we'd often say, like, oh, that's cool. So we'd get the job. And then about 4 years ago or so, we started getting communities saying, hey, we talked to the mayor at whatever town. We don't have a planning project. We'd like to license your software. About 4 years ago, we spun it off as a separate LLC. It is its own company now, and we're bringing it actually to the Esri marketplace so that cities all over the world will be able to do this, whether we're the planners or not. So, the whole thing came about. We were working in a community about 10 years ago and said, it's a blue-collar town, and a lot of people wanted to participate, but they literally worked the second shift and couldn't. And we said, why can't they just go to the library, hop online, and do like a charrette map, comment, whatever else, and crowdsource like a charrette, but in their pajamas at 3 a.m. eating cold pizza from home if they want? So we started working to write the code for what was initially it was a community mapper, and then when we brought it out as its own product, it was called SMAP, Social Mapping Application. And then last year in New York, we relaunched it as Map.Social, and that's what it is now. So it's a pretty cool thing. And for one of the things might be, this is a primary redevelopment site, and you can query it by wiping out all other comments except maybe only economic development related or public safety related. It'll all transfer as a layer to the city's GIS database. So the police chief could query, show me all the public safety concerns people have, and it would instantly crowdsource on a map. or show me the sites that people want to see most redeveloped and what they want it redeveloped as. It'll crowdsource to those sites and it'll tell you every site people want developed and how they want it redeveloped. It's a pretty cool tool. So that'll be on the website as well. And there'll be online questionnaires just using SurveyMonkey. And there'll be questionnaires for students or youth. There'll be questionnaires for residents. And there'll be questionnaires for business owners and operators. And so they're all geared a little bit different. On the website, there'll be frequently asked questions, what is a comprehensive plan, schedule of events, news announcements, what the process is, where we are in the process. And there'll be a section called documents where at any point in the process, any resident can click on that tab and see a PDF of any document that we've ever produced. Concepts, maps, outreach summaries, workshops, and then there'll be a place where residents can email in comments or concerns or questions or whatever. So it really is an interactive portal for the comp plan. And it'll be linked to the village's webpage, but we'll host it all at our shop. So that's sort of the outreach. And a lot of that is the upfront outreach. And then there'll be other things that will be done throughout the process, but that's sort of done right on the front end. The next thing, I'll go through this a bit more quickly, is existing conditions. I told you guys you have to have that honest conversation of where we are right now. So we'll look at zoning, market, demographics, land use, transportation, community facilities, open space. We'll look at in a housing market. We'll look at anything and everything. But we have to have a real solid understanding of what's going on right now in River Forest, the good, the bad, the ugly. And then we dovetail that existing conditions analysis with all of the outreach that we did into a synthesis report and said, here's the big issues. Here's what we found based on our research. Here's what we've heard based on people giving us comments. Here's what we think we need to focus on going forward. And so there'll be a, after all the things that is talked about, there'll be a culmination of all those things into a synthesis of issues and opportunities. So before we start crafting recommendations, we do that first. And it'll be vetted first here with this group. Once we've made any appropriate revisions, it'll get posted to the website. So you guys will hear it first. But you'll clearly know at that point what we're going to prioritize going forward. So it's a starting off point to make sure we're starting into plan development all on the same foot. So that's three existing conditions. And again, existing land use, facilities and infrastructure, transportation and mobility, parks and open space, environmental features and sustainability, that all gets brought together into an existing conditions report. The next thing we do is we do vision, goals, and objectives. And this is the first parlay into sort of developing the plan content. And we will have a community and a corridors visioning session and workshop. This would likely need to be conducted maybe at the community center or one of the school cafeterias. The previous workshops of this, people can just sit in the audience like this and we'll be up front conducting a workshop. But at this workshop, people need to be sitting in groups of 5 to 10 around a table with maps, markers, stickies. It's an interactive charrette. And the more the better. But what we want to do is begin to identify village-wide and focused on the corridors, what the constraints are, the opportunities, if people could have things the way they want it, where they would do what. But it's actually putting ideas to maps and have people get as specific as they can as a community with what they would like to see where and what they don't.
When you say corridors, you mean traffic, you mean commercial, you mean residential, you mean just...
Yeah, no, that's... It's a great question. When I say corridors, what I mean is Madison, Lake, North, and Harlem. When I say corridors, because it's a corridors master plan was done a few years back. And this is the part of the village that is most susceptible to change. It is also the economic engine of the village. Everything is on those corridors for the most part. It's the boundaries, right? Except for Lake Street, the rest are the boundaries. But Lake Street, you've got... Harlem and Lake, but then you also have Lake and Park, Lake and Lathrop, and everything between that that has a pretty unique set of uses as well and will likely change over the next decade. The majority of the village is comprised of single-family residential neighborhoods. We will not likely see, nor do we want to see, dramatic change in land use in those areas. We want to preserve them, stabilize them, reinforce them. That is the heart and soul of the community. But what is going to change and what needs to change to make sure it's an economic engine that it needs to be are the corridors. So when I refer to the corridors, I mean those four, North, Lake, Madison, and Harlem. So, and that's largely the commercial areas, the village's commercial areas. So when we get into this visioning charrette, we're going to have giant maps of like the village and those corridors blown up at huge scale. So a parcel isn't going to be like a little bitty thing on a map like this, but we might blow up the Madison Street corridor into a 6-foot-long map on the wall. So you can see individual buildings and parking lots and say, you know, we have to redevelop this. We, you know, this traffic over here is horrible. Parking is here. But but we'll get a sense specifically of what residents want to see done. It's not issues, but what they want to see done. And so that's a pretty, it's a fun exercise. And then after that, we'll begin to develop preliminary goals and objectives. What are the goals and objectives for the residential neighborhoods? What are the goals and objectives for Madison, Harlem? What are the goals and objectives for enhanced bicycle and pedestrian mobility? What are the goals and objectives for being a more sustainable and environmentally responsible community? So we'll develop a whole bunch of categories, and under each, we'll develop the goals and objectives that will guide the plan. All right? That's step four. Step five is where we focus on the corridors and the village center area. So before we look at the village-wide stuff, we want to get into the detailed planning for those four corridors I just mentioned. And I think this is a unique opportunity to really take a hard look at the area between Lathrop and Park. There's some village-owned property in there. There's been attempts to redevelop in the last few years that haven't panned out yet. But there's a lot of developer interest. They now have Ehlers on board to sort of help find the right development fit for some of those properties. But it's an area that will likely not be the exact same way it is now 10 years from now, where the residential neighborhoods largely will be essentially the same. Those areas will likely not be. But what are they going to become? So before we start looking at the village-wide stuff, we want to focus on those four specific areas. So we'll be doing some detailed planning, and I mean parcel by parcel level planning and strategies for, again, North, Lake, Madison, and Harlem, to really get down to the nitty-gritty and start framing out what we want those to be. And the reason we do this is you don't want to be in a position where if a developer comes forward, you're back on your heels sort of reacting to a development concept. You want to be proactively saying, hey, you know what? We thought about this. We have a detailed plan in place. We looked at the numbers. We looked at the neighborhood. We looked at the design. This is what we'd like to see here. Now, if you can work with us, come on board. But if you're going to propose something that is out in left field, that's not consistent with our plan. So we really want to get into some detailed planning for those corridors. So that's what step five will be. And again, we'll create the plans with the community. We will vet them all here first, and we will take them out to the public to get comment and feedback because they'll just be working drafts. But the working drafts first start with this group. So again, staff review and then plan commission meeting to review those. Over the course of the 10 or 12 months, this group will likely meet, I would say, probably five times or so on this project. So you're not meeting every other week, sometimes not even every month, because we might do a ton of outreach or do a bunch of investigation, and we might need a couple months just to begin to develop the concepts and do the maps and illustrations. So we're not going to be meeting the next month. So we may be meeting every month. We likely will be meeting more likely every other month. So we have time to develop content in between meetings. We don't want to meet for the sake of meetings. I know you probably like those. We'll likely be meeting every other month or so. The next thing is village-wide plans and policies, so not just the corridors. But this is the maps, the recommendations, the policies, and the objectives village-wide. And they'll likely be categorized into land use and development plan, a framework plan for neighborhoods and housing and the commercial areas, so two different framework plans, transportation and mobility plan, and that's going to include a bicycle master plan for the village within the transportation plan as a standalone, a parks, recreation, and open space and environmental features plan. That's not to say we're doing a park district master plan. We're not. They're their own taxing body. But comprehensive plans all have parks and open space or environmental open space plans. So a lot of that chapter is going to be a reflection of existing conditions or a reflection of the park district's plan. But we have to have it as a chapter in here so people know what this village's plan is for open space. So that'll be integrated into this as well. There'll be a chapter for public facilities and infrastructure. Again, I don't anticipate a lot of changes here, but are the schools going to be expanding? Are they not going to be expanding? Anecdotally, does the village need a new fire station? They don't, but some cities need a new fire station, so we try to figure out where they're going to be. But you need to have a chapter addressing the public facilities in town. This is often a chapter in a built-out community that it reads more almost like an existing conditions chapter because there are very, very little changes anticipated. But we have to go through that anyway. And then sustainability and community character frameworks. Now, this is where we recommend that community character and sustainability not be independent chapters. But in every other chapter, land use, transportation, open space, community facilities, community character and sustainability are integrated into those chapters throughout. One of the ways we often do this is we might have a land use and development chapter, and there may be a call out like in a magazine that says sustainability applications for land use. So it might be even called out within the land use chapter, or maintaining community character and integrity. In the land use chapter, it's a call out about community character and identity. So rather than having a separate chapter, we like integrating those throughout, but really prominently doing so. And it's more actionable at that point. So sustainability and community character will be appropriately integrated throughout. And the last chapter is always an implementation strategy. And more than simply saying, okay, here's the state grants you can go after for funding, or you can use TIF over here, we try to create an action plan for implementation over the 10-year period that identifies either long-term, mid-term, or short-term priorities or objectives, potential funding costs, potential funding sources, what the village's role is in getting something done, who they need to partner with because the village can't do everything themselves, and then maybe most importantly, metrics. How do we know if we're achieving success given any given recommendation? We don't want to use a benchmark because benchmarks can be arbitrary. Like, we want to increase bicycle trails in the forest reserve by 3 miles. Well, if you're at 2.8 miles, did you fail to meet that benchmark? I would say you may have failed the benchmark, but you've achieved a great thing because you've gotten 2.8 miles of additional trails. So what we want to typically have is performance indicators. How do you know if you're moving the needle in the right direction? So we try to get pretty specific on implementation. And then the last step after we do all of that is we pull it all together into a final document, public hearing, take it out to the community. You hold the public hearing and recommend it, then it goes to village board. So it's a lot. There's a lot in a comprehensive plan.
Can I ask about the infrastructure?
Sure.
So I know now they're doing some fixing up by the train station. Do you look at the bridges or any?
We won't do an engineering level inspection, but one of the things that would likely come out of that is to say, you know, improve the overpasses where or the viaduct, grade separated crossings to make them structurally sound, but also opportunities to improve neighborhood appearance through murals or decorative terracotta tiles. There may be, I'm just sort of saying that, but there may be ways of addressing those enhancements. But this won't be a CIP, a capital improvement plan. It won't be detailed engineering, and a lot of the infrastructure recommendations will have to come from staff as part of the sort of the CIP that the village has anyway, and we want to integrate those into planning recommendations. But this won't be a detailed utility or infrastructure investigation. That requires engineering and scoping, and I mean, literally of pipes or looking at structural stuff. This won't be that. Yeah, this won't be that.
A good example would be is if the village said the feedback you got was the positive feedback we received from the stormwater project we did on the north side. So great, we want to achieve in the next 50 years the ability to separate all the sewers.
Right.
Right, I see.
That'd be an inexpensive proposition.
That's
yeah, yeah, that combined stuff is rough. So that's a lot, but that's the scope of work. And as we go through this, I don't want you to be so rigid as to we may need to be a bit flexible in what we do when we do it in response to an issue that may come up. Maybe like, boy, we never thought we'd have to take a look at X, Y, and Z, but it keeps coming up over and over again, so we might want to have another workshop just to address this issue. We didn't plan on it, but we want to be responsive like that. So
you think the 10 to 12 months is ambitious for a community our size?
No. I most comprehensive plans for communities, even two or three times the size, is a year. 15 years? No, I'm just kidding. Sasad? No, I think that was 18 months. But we did, we've done other ones as, we've done some as for teeny communities, that 8 to 10 month time frame. But I would say most comprehensive plans are done a year, give or take a couple of months. For bigger communities, we're working on one in Colorado that's, I think it's a 18 month time frame, and that's 600 or 380,000 people.
So. Supposed to be 600,000
in the next 10 years. Right, it's going to boom. A year is not aggressive at all. It maintains that good flow of not people going like, oh my God, another meeting? But not too much time in between them. So it's a good cadence. So, all right, now, I probably went on too long about that, but I want to let you know what it is we're going to be going through. The next thing I want to do, and we'll get through this pretty quickly, is I'm going to hand out these questionnaires, or Paul will hand out these questionnaires. And don't start writing on them yet. So I'm just going to be like a teacher now. Just keep it down, turn it over. I'll tell you when to turn it over, right? When we're done, you can put your head on your desk so I know you're finished. But this is, and I'm going to walk you through this, and we'll do it a bit more quickly here. And the reason I do this is a couple fold. I want to see what you think, the what your answers are to these questions, but I also want you to know what we're going to take the rest of the community through. When we do the initial outreach with the community, the DIY kits, the community workshop, and the business workshops, and the village workshop, and the joint boards and commissions, we ask everybody these four questions because we want to be able to compare answers between groups. The online surveys and stuff are more complicated and have a lot more questions, but the initial outreach, we ask these four questions, and we do it, there's a logic to it, so we can compare them. And residents can see the different answers among the different groups. This is designed to be implemented in a group of 8 people or a group of 150 people. It is designed to get through even a group of 150 people in an hour and a half. Most people, when they get done with this exercise, they're like hooping and hollering and clapping. Most people really like it. And it prevents anybody from standing on a soapbox and hijacking a meeting. It gives the person who has a lot to say the same amount of time to say something as someone who you have to sort of force something out of them to, you know, really extract it out of them. So this has been developed over time and it works really well. So we're going to do it a bit more abbreviated here, but when we do this in the workshop, we write the answers down on a big easel pad and post them on the wall so everybody in the room can see what people are saying. But this is a really small sort of informal group, so we'll just go around. So we're going to do this. So the first one, question number one, this is what I want you to focus on first. Don't answer questions 2, 3, and 4, just question 1. Identify 5 issues or concerns confronting River Forest right now. What you think are 5 of the most important issues facing this community right now. So go ahead and write those down on question number 1. Don't answer 2, 3, or 4, just question 1. You can write as much as you want, but brevity is appreciated because we have to type all these up. Lisa, you can write things down too if you want. And if you only think of a few, just put those 3 down. If you think of 6, go ahead and put 6 down. That's fine. I'll give you 1 more minute. I know I'm doing kind of quick tonight, but I'll give you 1 more minute. Okay, so if you're still writing, go ahead and finish up what you're writing. So now what we do, and again, imagine a room with 100 people in it. We've given them 5 minutes or so to write down their answers. I then will go around the room, and I'll go around here as well. I'll go around the room, and I'll call on each person. When I call on you, give me 1 of the things you wrote down. Not all 5, just 1 of them. And when the person gives me that thing, we write it down on the board so people can see what everybody, and we number it. And as we go around the room, don't repeat something somebody else has already said. All right, I only want to hear something once. If everybody says we need another dog park, I only need you to say it. And when we collect and analyze everything, I'll know everybody said it, so I'll know it'll rank way up there. But initially, what we're trying to do is get every issue up on the wall. All right. If we get to you and all 5 of yours have already been taken, which happens, depending on the size of the room, then to say all mine are already up there, and we go around. And we go around the room until we've got everybody's ideas on the wall. And that's the whole point. So we're not generating the issues that are facing the community. The people in the room are. Because the rest of the exercises all depend on the answers that are on the wall that the residents gave. So we'll start right over there and go ahead and give us 1 of the things you wrote down. Just
the first one, transportation, active transportation, walkability, bikeability, and access to trains.
All right, so access and mobility, so active transportation and transit. That has, in the last 7 years or so, gone from an issue that almost never appeared on the top 50 list to almost always the top 3. And that's true whether it's a farming community or a city of 300,000 people. But that has come out of nowhere to be one of the top issues everywhere across the country. So it's people's priorities are beginning to shift. All right, 1 of yours.
Nature challenges.
All right. So resiliency or hazard, they call hazard mitigation. So, right. Okay.
Yeah. Deer.
Deer on Thatcher Avenue going southbound. or eating on my hostas in my front yard.
Oh,
yeah, right. Okay.
I think affordability and maintaining some level of socioeconomic diversity.
Oh, that's good. That's very good. That's very good. Because, that's a very good one.
Which I related to increasing revenue as well as...
Exactly right, right. And often a challenging thing to do in a more affluent community. It's a challenging, where's the sweet spot of that, right? That's good.
So does that dovetail? That's why I said high property taxes.
Oh, yeah, that goes with that. It also goes with economic development and
so I said the lack of nice restaurants and lack of
right. Okay, very good. All right.
Crowding in schools.
Right.
We don't have enough classroom space.
So you need more bigger schools or more classroom space for a larger student capacity. Okay, good. Elaine? Give us one of yours that you wrote down.
What?
Give us one of the ones you wrote down on your list, one of the issues. Yeah, right here. Just read one of them off. Read one of those off. Parking?
Oh. Well, I have concerns about going down Lake Street.
Okay.
During T-ball.
Right.
And stuff. Kids.
Oh, by Keystone Park especially.
Yeah.
Right, right. Okay, good. That's very good. I just have another one of yours. This is one we haven't heard yet. I saw him looking at your paper when you were.
No. Sound pollution.
Interesting.
The leaf blowers all day long on every single.
Yeah, why
house.
Are they raking? They could just get exercise.
You rake in the fall, but leaf blower in the summer is what you're chasing grass. But that level of sound pollution.
So just noise levels are okay? All right.
Yeah, what about those generators? I used to like when we lost power.
Right.
You lose power. Like
you bust out the candle?
I know. I kind of like light the candles. You can't do anything.
It is fun. It is funny when you have a power outage. You look down the street, there's that one house that's lit up like a Christmas tree.
But you're the generator.
Yeah. That's too funny. Okay.
A lack of community cohesion activities and social educational programs.
That's good. That's very good. All right. Lisa?
Congestion and sort of more of a pedestrian orientation to address some of that. I mean, lovely if Lake Street could have sort of a pedestrian
right.
Retail commercial orientation to it.
Right. So that area between Park and Lathrop. Try to get more of, okay, yeah. That's been, boy, over the last 20 years, that's been a hard thing to get. And remember, anybody back, remember Forest Market was there?
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't you love to have that back again?
Oh, my God.
Right, right. Your turkey, your pork tenderloin, or what? I mean, like I loved going in there. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
Not there anymore. So I liked it.
Well, I said overcrowding parking at Whole Foods in there, especially busy times.
Well,
that's
to my pedestrian orientation.
Right. Right.
I mean, I wish. I guess if you have, like in the city, people have the big carts that they bring with them. So
right.
I used to bike. I used to bike with two big bags.
Right. But it's that it's so it goes back to that active transportation. It's being able to get around, not in a car, in a more safe design environment. Yeah, part of the challenge up in the town center is a lot of the parking centers in Town Center 1 are a little bit narrower than most typical parking spaces to get more parking in there because it was a confined site. But those are, you open those doors, it's tough. So, all right.
I don't know. I think I'm just touching on what they're saying, but I'd love to see restaurants on Lake Street where you can just get on your bike and go and have dinner there and have some wine.
Right, no.
Right.
It'd be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah, it would be nice. All right, Elaine, do you have another one?
No.
Okay, go back around, another one.
I had a community communication. He was talking about within the community more cohesion.
Right.
But I think also with our surrounding communities.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. A lot of the communication protocols that cities are beginning to put into place are game changers. From the city to businesses, from the city to residents, from resident group to resident group. I mean, it's really amazing the different networks are beginning to emerge formally in cities. It's pretty cool. Yeah, it really helps knit together the community in a different way. It's kind of neat. Yeah.
The other one I have is, and I don't know if this is true, but I get the impression that our schools are dropping in the standings.
Are they? I don't know. I don't know if they are based on state scores or not. I always thought they were like one or two every year, right? Or
I don't know.
I'd have to know. Yeah.
My kids are out of it.
Yeah, my kids are out of it. Yeah,
they're I'm very proud of our schools.
Yeah.
But we used to be like statewide, no.
Oh, one or two. Roosevelt and Lincoln were always one or two in the state, always. Yeah. All right.
They've all grown and done really well.
All right.
Mine's back on
for our land uses. We can't right. create any new parks.
Right.
Just even maintaining, like, I think something that's been so special about the community are these gorgeous old trees
right.
that are now dying, and being proactive about
right.
planting now.
Right.
Just really, you know, having a great survey done by the
right.
Botanical Society or something about the status of these
right.
community trees.
What is... Lisa, you might know, what is it, 14% of the parkway trees had been lost over the last, what's the number? I used to know, I can't remember now.
I don't know it off the top of my head, so I can ask Eric if he gets back. But the substantial portion.
Yeah, well, last week I lost a red oak in my parkway. It was only about that big around at the trunk. Yeah. So.
There was a survey done of the pre-settlement. Folks,
right.
And they had a presentation at the Cheney Mansion, and they covered Oak Park and River Forest. So there's someone who's done the mapping of the ones, but that covers the ones before there were houses or when there was just Concordia or Dominican
right.
or Rosary at the time. But the other significant trees, I think, would be cool to add on to that.
Right.
They only did the ones that they know were pre-settled.
And then, you know, being proactive about planting.
Yeah.
They're much more proactive in that regard. Instead of waiting for something to die and then putting in a tree, sort of knowing the life expectancy of the tree.
Right.
I'm going to say one word thing. I don't know how this would happen, but somehow to integrate the forest preserve with the community.
I love that one, right?
I mean, I grew up in a lot of space around me, so this is hard for me. So sometimes in the winter, I go in there with my dog.
Same way, I do the same thing.
Yeah.
It's a great asset, but we're not well connected to it like other communities.
It's an asset that is just simply not leveraged.
Well, I know, years ago when my kids were little, they said, be careful in there, too.
You do, right. Well, that's the other thing is I know a lot of people in the past, historically there's been a reluctance by some, I think I'm going way, way back, to sort of formalize space in there because of people who might go back there and cause harm to other people that go back there. But it can more become a formalized public access. It actually makes it safer than an informal one that's not watched. Right. If only the Forest Reserve headquarters was close enough that we could conveniently walk down and talk to those people.
There are bike trails on
the
trails there about 2 years ago.
They banned them? Yeah. They might want to tell all the people that mountain bike there.
I'll
have to lecture my son and myself.
Yeah. So I think that relationship, it could be improved. Especially since we have the headquarters here.
We bike in there all the time. I mean, we have friends that live up near Dominican, and we get there, and I live south of the tracks. We get there along the river on the trails.
And there's some new signs that say no biking.
Yeah, well.
Okay. And we're like the only right. stretch of the Plains River that doesn't have a trail. The minute you cross North Avenue, you can
and there's,
go all the way to Wisconsin.
And there's history. There's.
Creek, you can go all the way down, but here you
that's not by inadvertent omission. That was by design going way, 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 way back to where I think there was an opportunity to put that trail in, and it didn't go in because River Forest stopped it. That's exactly right.
Wanted to keep it.
Yeah. So I think this may be a time to possibly revisit things like that. So.
Cross-country ski trails.
Right.
Amazing.
Be beautiful. Some good sledding in there, too.
I have one that you brought up, but no one else did, is a dog park.
Right.
Because I know my neighbors were going over to the Fenwick area, and then they said no dogs allowed.
Right.
And then my other neighbor now is driving down First Avenue.
Across from Loyola?
Yes, and going in there.
You have to get a Forest Reserve pass for that.
Yes,
we have one, I know, yeah.
So, again, I don't even know we have a lot of space anyways, but, or just make it known that these are some of the places you can use.
Right.
Your dog to bark in the park by me.
Right.
Bark in the park. Don't ask, don't tell. All the dogs are off.
I love it. Okay, and we'll go a couple more. Go ahead. No more? Do you have any other?
I don't know if this is in your preview, but I think there should be a deer roundup in Fancher Woods.
Yeah. It's amazing how bold they're getting.
So
and I got who else has...
No, we were at Kitfall. We were at Flamingo Friday,
yeah.
And they were just walking around.
Yeah. Oh, middle of the day, right down the middle of the street.
So.
Yeah.
They're right next door. Come on over.
Is anybody else seeing coyotes in the village?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, so. I kind of like them, but... Yeah. So okay. Yeah, the deer thing is a good one. So okay. So we've been around a few times. Oh, go ahead and throw another one out there.
I would say I don't know. I'm not aware of everything that the community has to offer. So I didn't know that there was an arborist.
Right.
Until somebody told me.
Right.
That person would come around and tell me what kind of tree would be good here.
And we hear that a lot. A lot of communities provide just an amazing amount of services and knowledge and whatever else, or programs, and people just don't know. We hear that all the time. And sometimes it's not that the village isn't putting all that information out there aggressively so, and you know, in a proactive way. But until you sort of need it, you're not looking for it, so you're not receptive. There's a lot of background noise in the world today, and it's hard to punch through, but that's a good one.
It's harder now today than it was even 10 years ago.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right.
The last example we had is downstairs in the basement. We have a pharmaceutical drug recycling thing for the county. And so you tell people that, like, well, we had no idea. Why don't you say something? Well, we said it like 5 or 6 times, and I'm not trying to be confrontational, but
right.
You have to hit it, repeat it.
Yeah.
Instead of throwing them in the trash, right?
I mean, how many emails?
Yeah.
How many emails do we get that we just delete without opening, and so now they have clutter? I mean, that's like, it's because there's just so much trying to punch through.
You can come any time during the day to drop them off.
Yeah, it's right now. When you go downstairs in the basement. There's a metal canister. It's bolted to the ground. It looks like a mailbox. You just throw your drugs in there, and the pharmaceutical drugs, and then the county comes and picks them up.
That's great. That's great.
I have one that kind of hits on what Lisa was saying about affordability and a little economic diversity, but I think it's more specific to housing types. We
right.
have single family, but types of housing, alternative housing, like being able to have an adult child in your own
right. Accessory.
Single family.
Right.
Or, I mean, a right. single floor living for people with mobility issues.
Right.
Options for that to age in place and
right. Yeah, and that's a good one. I mean, it's when you get to a certain point where you are no longer able to or no longer desire to maintain a single-family detached resident, what are your options? There's beginning to be more here. I mean, I worked here 20 years ago. There weren't even as many options as there are right now, but they call that the missing middle, and that is, you know, you've got your sort of cheaper, affordable sort of rental apartments that aren't like college kiddie sort of things are from the 70s, or they have real nice single-family detached homes. But where's that missing middle? And the best way I've heard it described in terms of aging in place is, as you go through life, you change your lifestyle. You shouldn't have to change your quality of life. And that's the thing about that. That's an important distinction. And if your family ties are here, your church ties are here, your kids are here, your organizations are here, and you have to move out of your home, can you stay in River Forest? I mean, there's more options now than there used to be, but that's the notion of aging in place.
That was one of the developments that was proposed,
yeah.
which I thought would have happened,
yeah.
Lake and Park.
Yeah.
It was one of a retirement that was
commercial on the right. School. Well, I remember that one, yeah.
Yeah, and that one, I thought that
yeah.
was good.
So the aging in place is an issue. So we just to sort of keep things going, so we've gone around a few times. So imagine if we had 100 people in the room, we may have a list of, you know, 50 to 100 issues up on the wall and all numbered. So now I say question number 2 is based on all the things that you've heard talked about so far, and they'll be all written on the wall. Pick the 3 most important in order of importance. Now, this is tough when you're looking at a list of 80 things. And the reason we do this for a couple of reasons is as important as it is for us to hear at the beginning of a project what residents' issues are, I think it's more important for residents to hear what their neighbors' issues are because it opens their eyes. And I'd say about 60 to 70% of the time when we ask question number 2, when we say write down your 3 most important in order, the 3 that get written down aren't any one of the 5 that the person first wrote down, which means something was said in that room that changed their perspective. That's crucial to planning. We go through life like this, usually our routines, our people, our whatever, and I've had people come up and say, like, boy, the young woman sitting next to me, why aren't we doing what she said? And this guy lived here his whole life, never thought about it. So we add question number two, take a couple minutes, write down the 3 most important issues that have been discussed in order of importance, the single most important, the second, and the third, and try not to combine them. You can't say, like, I'm lumping together quality of life, aging in place, need for more restaurants, economic engine, and walkability into one. You can't do that. So 3 distinct issues in order of importance. So we're forcing you to do that. It's a tough question. And you have to draw from the ones that have been talked about or written down. And again, when we do it with the group, they're all on the wall. All right, I'll give you a few more seconds. All right, Commissioner Cragen, let's hear your 3. Just matter of fact, it's this, and this. Just
1, occupancy, transportation. 2, maintain and develop quality connections with nature, between canopy and forest preserve.
I noticed.
And 3, stormwater management that is not combined sewers. All the
right.
disconnects and more permeable pavers, all the things that aren't the expensive capital.
Right. The sustainability approach to green infrastructure, right? MWRD is about to undertake a massive regional initiative, multi-million over multi-year to do just that, so, right?
I also like the transportation people, not just the cars, but the other ones as well. So number one, keeping the residents in the community with options.
Right.
With affordable options and little ones.
Right.
And number three would be just community cohesion through activities.
That's good. I like that one a lot. It happens. It happens.
I said affordability, but I think that's a fun one too, because I think the solution is commercial retail development.
To offset property taxes to get, yes. Right.
And I'm hoping it's walkable. So.
Right.
Schools, I put as number two.
Okay.
And three, sort of the nature.
Okay. Very good.
So I put affordability as number one.
Okay.
Number two, the active transportation. And number three, businesses.
Okay.
Local restaurants.
Very good.
The economic development, which I think covers a lot. And then schools were true. And then quality of life, we were for us.
Right. And that may be the ultimate bundling. Right there, which is. Marianne, nicely done. That was. But that's the bottom line. And the other thing, let's get Elaine's first. So go ahead, anyone that you want to.
Well, I just have a real problem with the deer. I think that is something that really needs to be addressed.
Right.
One ran right in front of me on Thatcher the other day, and fortunately I was going slow enough that it wasn't a calamity. But and I think it'd be nice to have maybe nice restaurant in town.
It would be, yeah, I agree. All right, that's good. And the key thing here that you said is, I think the reason why people innately bundle these or group these is you can't divorce one from another. They're all related in some way, shape, or form. More walkable is more livable. Aging in place allows people to stay here longer, so it's a more livable neighborhood throughout life. Economic development makes the other things less expensive as taxes on residential come down because economic revenue goes up. It's all goes back to Marianne, it's about quality of life. It really is. Question number three, this is the toughest one. Let's say that President Ducey and the board tomorrow say, you know what, we're done, we're moving to Naples, we're out of here. All right, we're done. And you guys are in charge. Starting tomorrow, you guys are in charge. And all 12,000 residents come in here and say, okay, Kerry, you tell us what we're going to do. Tell us three things that you would do, actionable things that we're going to either do right now or start doing right now to make River Forest a better place. And we're behind you. So you're in charge. You're calling the shots. And you can identify three specific things. I don't want generalities. You know, in communities where public safety, I don't want people to say do something about public safety. Well, that's not actionable, but you might say hire additional police to patrol the neighborhoods in the downtown. That's a specific implementation action, a specific project, a specific thing. Develop the vacant building on the intersection of whatever and whatever. That's a specific thing. I don't want generalities. If you're in charge tomorrow, we'll do it. You have to identify the three things we're going to do or start doing. What are those three things? It's all on you. Starting tomorrow, you have to identify the three things we should start doing to make River Forest a better place. What are those three things? This is the toughest question. Not for you though, she's done. So three specific projects or actions that you would undertake or begin undertaking. Anybody want to guess when we ask fifth graders across the country what their top two answers are? Almost universally, doesn't matter what city, it's close. Now the first one is a pool, if they don't have a pool. If they have the best pool in the world, they want a better pool. So pool is almost always, pool or better pool is always number one. The second one is almost always in the Midwest. It changes by name. It's around here, it's we want a Culver's. And in other parts of the country, it's whatever that, or whatever that regional, no, for kids, fifth graders, it's whatever that fast food is that's most popular in that, yeah, or whatever, right. So it's a pool, number one, that's universal. Two is always like the coolest fast food thing that fifth graders like. That's always one and two, always, always one and two.
You can do college students and sort of like Chipotle.
Yeah, right, right. It's true.
Well, I happen to be at one of a 200 meeting when the park districts came to talk about pool, and the River Forest Park District had just done that quality of life survey, or what would you like to see, their strategic planning survey, and pool came out as near the top, and it wasn't even one of the things listed.
Yeah.
It wasn't an option, but people wrote it in.
There's history to that, too.
Well, and especially with Concordia pool closing.
Right. Yeah, right. Yep.
But it wasn't even fifth grade.
Right. Specific project or action you'd like to see undertaken, top three. Go ahead, let's start with you again. Three things you'd do.
I've spoken at public meetings about this. All intersections be controlled. People know what to do at a four.
Okay.
It's an easy one. A bike path to connect all the other bike paths.
Okay.
And the viaduct at Harlem and Lake, which I know the River Forest has repeatedly requested IDOT help fund with the other villages, and it keeps not getting funded, and that's my viaduct I go through for on the train, and it's horrible.
Yeah, that's...
Funds for that.
It's like $20-30 million.
It's a big lift. It's a big lift. I think a lot of people were hoping it would get addressed as the part of the CREATE program, which is the federal...
Villages of Park River Forest Park have applied for U.S. federal funds, the Tiger Grant.
Right, right. It's a...
I met the department, the Secretary of Transportation personally. I met with him.
Yep.
Didn't
it's a choke point for sure. There's no question. All right. Top three things you would do.
Yeah, that is good on this one. I would modify the corridor, specifically Lake, to make it more pedestrian and bicycle friendly.
Okay.
I think we should hire a firm to work on a social calendar, public awareness recruitment. And I agree every intersection should be controlled.
Okay, all right.
There should be no confusion. There should be no...
It doesn't mean four-way stops, but just
right.
People should know what they're supposed to do.
Right, right.
It's uncontrolled intersection.
Yeah, there's several. There are several, yeah. And I know a lot of that is warrants.
I have a long history with those.
Yeah, right, right. And we suggested that when we did the Kenilworth comp plan, and their police chief came in and yanked all those recommendations out.
The police did?
In
Kenilworth?
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah, so, yep. Yeah, so that's something that comes up a lot, and transportation-related things are often among the highest priorities identified, and they're often among the last things done. And I think largely because, maybe not the controlled intersection, but largely because they're multi-jurisdictional issues if IDOT or the county are involved. So even if the city wants to do something or the village, they can because it's not their jurisdiction. And when they can do something, it's a lot of money and a lot of time. And so often transportation things don't get done as expeditiously as zoning changes are easy, or development sometimes can even be easy relative to large capital improvement stuff. So. Three things, Lisa.
All
right.
Commercial development at the Lakes Street corridor.
Okay.
Promotion of sustainable transportation, so the bikeways,
right.
Greater access to the public transportation, and then, the nature canopy, so
right. The other thing that comes up the most among kids is trees. And one fourth grader, whatever girl put it the best, she goes, why would I move back here when I get older if there aren't any trees left? I'd move to a place where there were trees. Who would want to live in a place where there aren't a lot of trees? He's like, who would want to do that? So she goes, it's got to be a priority. Because I don't care how nice the houses are. If there's no trees anywhere, who wants to live in a place like that? I'm like, well, there you go. So there's, again, sometimes, through the mouth of kids, they cut to it. So. Good. We could look into that. Yeah, we could look into that. Right. And again, one of the things we're going to be producing as part of this is sort of a bike master plan for the village.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll try to identify where you can put a bike lane, where you can't because of right-of-way width, where it might just have to be marked, maybe try to make some inroads into the forest preserve, where bike racks should go versus where they are now, or just try to get a better sense of that across the entire spectrum. Yeah.
But what if there's a bike lane
work with some of that, with the deers.
Right,
you know,
right.
The big wild animals.
Right. Who does it? Is that the Forest Reserve brings people in, or who does, who, is it the state? That's what I was wondering. Illinois Department of Natural Resources.
So that's, like, surprising this question often. So the issue becomes that there are, you'll hear stories of communities that have partnerships with the Forest Reserve District because they have large swaths of public land that's not the Forest Reserve. So the Forest Reserve does not let you cull or manage the animals on their property. Glencoe is a good example. The Village of Glencoe, owns a public golf course. So they work with the county to do it on their golf course. And we don't have that big piece of property. The only thing that could take place, in my opinion, is if the Oak Park Country Club and River Grove and Elmwood Park and the Forest Reserve already got together and did something at the country club at some point, I think maybe you could work something out. But we don't, our challenge is we don't have any big
right.
room in town.
Right.
Yeah. So what is your recourse when the deers are keep coming to our town from the north?
Nothing.
It really is nothing.
Except
I mean,
deer hunting time when they give us
right.
lessons.
You
start shooting the deer.
I mean, you can't, but that's the problem.
You can't legally.
Right. You can't shoot a gun off in town legally, and then you can own a firearm. But then the Forest Reserve won't let you shoot
right.
in their area as well. So that's why you have to eventually find, like to me, the country club would be the only property
right.
big enough. If those jurisdictions that said, yeah, that's something
right. Again, it's sort of the pro and con of living next. You have a community with an extensive tree canopy.
Right.
It's gorgeous, but with it comes a lot of costs of maintenance
right.
and upkeep and whatever. You live next to a large open area. It's beautiful. It's great to live next to it for walking or walks with your bike or biking or with your dog or your family or whatever back in there. But the downside is all those critters come out, and it's the way it goes. So. Right.
For people that are commuting back and forth the city, that problem. And then to be able to expand classroom space in schools.
Okay. Good. All right, Elaine, what would you do?
Well, this has to do with Boreos, I'm sure.
Okay.
But I think our taxes are so out of control
yeah.
and they're so inconsistent.
Right.
And I would like to see those photo traffic
cameras
eliminated
yeah.
on
yeah.
cars.
Yeah.
And then I have to guess I'm a real fan of Culver's.
You see, there you go. I love it. Yeah, the closest one is what on Roosevelt and Berwyn or whatever. I don't know why I know that, but it's just a guess. That's funny. All right, so the last one is an easy one, and I think for a lot of people, and we won't go around, but you can just sort of shout out answers, but write down what's best about River Forest, what's its greatest strengths, what are the community's greatest assets? Because when you set about doing a plan, a lot of people focus solely on what they want to change, what they need to improve or whatever, but if you don't identify what is best about what you have, you can run the risk of losing it. I see communities do this all the time. I live in a grew up in St. Joe, Michigan, born and raised, was a lifeguard at the beach for 5 summers, and at one point they allowed a couple of condominium buildings to be built down off the bluff along the lake. And one of the most world famous views was from Whitcomb Towers on the bluff by the Maids of the Mist Fountain from the Columbian Exposition, which is now over there, a view to the lighthouse with the catwalk, which is on a U.S. postage stamp because it's one of the most beautiful lighthouses around, with the sun setting behind it. And now you can't because there's a condominium building there. So at no point in time they say, hey, we wanted to develop, you know, the lakefront with amusement or condominiums or boat slips. That's all fine, but they should have said, while maintaining the line of sight from the bluff to the horizon, because that was an asset for the entire community. And now there are parts on the bluff. It's still, there are areas that are gorgeous, but there are some parts that historically were the prime view, and now all you see is condominium towers. That, because they didn't articulate what was best about what they had and then planned around it. They just said, this is what we want to change, and they changed it without keeping an eye on what was most valuable. So it's important to know in your community what is best about what you have, and leverage that and protect it and make it better, but don't inadvertently undo it as you try to accomplish something else. So you really got to identify what's best. And residential character and integrity of the neighborhoods obviously is a crown jewel of this. So you know that's got to be, anybody who comes here is just like, oh, the neighborhoods are beautiful, the trees are gorgeous. Well, you know, then you need to sort of pay homage to that and protect them and keep them going. So you have to identify what is best about what we have. So anybody, just throw a few of them out there.
Storm
homes. Right, neighborhoods. The architecture is fantastic.
I think you guys said you have a strong sense of community.
Right.
I mean, I think that's one of the biggest draws for us, that so many families have been here for generations. And
right.
I have both my daughters are here.
Right.
And they have three generations here now. And I think that's
right. I think it's a trifecta. You've got tree-lined, architecturally rich, beautiful neighborhoods. You've got incredible schools, and you've got easy, convenient regional access to downtown Chicago.
And
man,
airports.
That is, yeah, that's it. Regional location and accessibility, incredible neighborhoods, and amazing schools. That's pretty much the gold medal there. I mean, that's a nice trifecta. So. I think they've done a great job. I look at development over the last couple of decades and who's done a really nice job. And I could look into a lot of private development, but I think Dominican has done one of the most responsible, nice jobs of development to its campus. Not saying anything against Concordia and what they've done. They've done some nice things with the Christian Center and other things as well, the dormitory. But I think Dominican has set the bar for facility reinvestment in this community. They've done a real nice job. They should be commended for it. I agree.
And you're a reflection of your leaders.
Right.
So if you don't have those leaders, the next ones come in, they're a reflection of that.
Well, Marianne and Elaine, how long have you guys been serving on that? How long have I been working with you two? 18, 20 years or something like that, right? Just about the whole time, right? Yeah. So.
I would add safety and quiet.
I would agree.
And then
right.
I would add proximity to retail commerce.
Yep. Yeah, people say what's... One of the best things about living in River Forest is being so close to downtown Forest Park and Oak Park. And to be able to ride your bike over to the restaurants on Madison, or to ride your bike and go see a movie and go into a restaurant in downtown Oak Park, those are pretty nice amenities for River Foresters.
We didn't know those parks going over to some of the two.
Right.
When I was moving here 20 years ago, we were looking North Shore, and you couldn't find a lot of the cheaper
right.
places. Now you can.
Right.
And then we're like, oh, you can go right over here. And so get to the Target.
Right. No, I agree.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, I'll collect these papers before we head out. But I want to thank you for serving as a resident on the Plan Commission, because I know it's sometimes they're thankless jobs, but we need people dedicated like you to set the course for the village. And I appreciate it as a resident. As a planner, I look forward to working with all of you on this project. It really will be a fun project. And it will really be interesting to begin to see what residents begin to voice as their priorities as we craft this plan. We look forward, me and my team, to working with you and the village to craft what I hope will be a really remarkable comprehensive plan document, knowing that as a resident here, we'll be putting everything we possibly can into this to make it the best plan we can. So look forward to it. Thank you so much. You can leave your papers on the table, and I'll pick them up. So that's it. Thanks, everybody.
Thank
you,
John.
You bet.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.